All it takes for evil to succeed is for good people to say, it's a business.
Catapult of propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our bunker. It is November the 12th of 2006. Mm-hmm. It's a Sunday evening. Ho! Oh, and the whole nation is not only mourning the loss of the Rams, but also...
Well, the Rams are still with us. They just lost their game against the Seahawks tonight.
Yeah,
in the last
again.
Second. That field goal kicker for Seattle's done it to us twice in the final seconds this year.
But also everyone is taking a breather after last Tuesday's election.
Yeah, that was an interesting outcome, and we'll talk about that as we go through the next hour.
It was a tough night for you, and if you want to know exactly what it was like for Derek, you can go to his website, DerekPGilbert.com, and there's a photo there taken in the studio when he was over at the Eagle on Tuesday night calling the results as they came in. It was a harrowing night.
It was harrowing. Yes, Sharon found the picture. It very appropriate for what was going on in there.
You have to decide which one is Derek.
Yes. Give you a clue.
He's in the dress.
I picked the wrong week to give up coffee.
Oh, gosh. It turned out exactly as I thought it would, with the exception that I really did pray that here in Missouri that voters would vote against that second
Amendment 2.
Exactly. That just is silly. It's just ate up.
Yeah, and I think that the big money men who supported Amendment 2, and in fact, it was basically one guy.
Stowers.
Yes, James Stowers and his wife, Virginia, who themselves put about $28 million of their own money into the PR campaign mm-hmm. that helped convince 51% of Missouri's voters that it was a good idea to enshrine human cloning in our state constitution. Mm-hmm. But that's a drop in the bucket for Stowers. He is a billionaire.
Oh, yeah. That's nothing. And he's going to reap so many benefits from
right.
this.
Something that didn't come out during the campaign, and we'll just touch on this for a minute, that Stowers, who has founded the Stowers Institute in Kansas City, which is a life sciences research facility, has been working on this now for at least 5 or 6 years. He had held up the threat of a $300 million expansion of his Stowers Institute being contingent upon the passage of Amendment 2,
mm-hmm.
which got a lot of the educators in the University of Missouri and the Kansas University systems behind Amendment mm-hmm. 2. Why? Because their researchers want to do this research, and they know that by doing this type of research, they can apply for grant money, mm-hmm. and then they can also monetize their discoveries through a for-profit division mm-hmm. of the Stowers Institute that Stowers created in 2001, which wasn't talked about at all during the campaign.
So it means that we taxpayers get to
right.
pay for Stowers R&D.
Yeah. If embryonic stem cell research, and in case you're outside Missouri, not familiar with what Amendment 2 was, it was purported to be an amendment that protected stem cell research in Missouri.
And supposedly was banning cloning.
Was banning cloning. The simple language that appeared on the ballot that voters saw said it would ban human cloning in Missouri. When you actually read Amendment 2, the complete language inside in the third or fourth page of the five-page document, cloning was redefined to mean somatic cell nuclear transfer that was then implanted in the uterus or in mm-hmm. the womb. So, in other words, you can clone as long as you...
For the purpose of creating a human being.
Yes.
So lots of definitions
there.
That could be taken. You know, you read it and you think, well, I know what that means. But legally, do you know what is?
Right.
Is.
It's exactly. It's that sort of legalistic thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it would be like saying, you know, murder is illegal in mm-hmm. Missouri, but then redefining it
exactly.
to say it's
you have
only
to define
murder.
Implantation. You have
yeah.
to define womb. You have to define human being.
Yes, which is something I hadn't even thought of. What is the definition of a person?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But on simplest terms, what it means is you can create a cloned embryo as long as you kill it again within 14 days for research purposes. In other words, it's more accurately described not as a stem cell initiative, but as a clone and kill bill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it passed 51.5% to about 48.5%.
We voted against it.
Yeah.
But we didn't get to vote more than once each.
Right. So all we can hope now is that the federal government, well, either one of two things. Either we pass another constitutional amendment, which in Missouri requires only a simple majority of the voters, which is stupid. Mm-hmm. Or, secondly, that the federal government bans cloning, which is going to be an even tougher fight than getting it through Missouri. I mean, if Missouri voters, which are about as conservative as you will find in the United States, can be fooled into passing this, it's going to be a lot tougher to get a cloning ban passed through the House of Representatives and the Congress, I mean, and the Senate, representing liberal states like California, Oregon, New York, et cetera.
You know, my basic deal is that anybody who wants to put it in a state constitution, really, you have to start asking, why do you want it enshrined in
Do you want it in the Constitution? Right. What other industries do we afford constitutional protection to? I mean, what if the Bush family in St. Louis tried to pass a constitutional amendment, spent $30 million of their own money
B-U-S-C-H,
right,
by the way.
Exactly. It's an Anheuser-Busch, which is based out of St. Louis. What if they tried to pass a constitutional amendment giving it, say, the exclusive right to sell beer in Missouri? We don't do that. We don't do that for transportation. We don't do it for
manufacturing. Well, you know what I have to say? That sounds like a no-brainer, doesn't it?
It does.
But if the Bush family decided to spend millions and millions of dollars to buy that amendment, which is what Stowers did.
Which is what Stowers did, right.
Who knows?
Yeah.
It all depends on how it's worded.
Wesley J. Smith, who I interviewed a couple of times on the radio program about Amendment 2, put it very eloquently. What do you get the billionaire who's got everything? His own constitutional amendment.
I know. Yeah. I wish I had one.
Yeah. Well, we'll work on that.
Okay.
There was another amendment that passed, by the way, which was interesting and just goes to show how the verbiage used in the simple ballot language can be deceptive. Amendment 7 passed in Missouri by about an 85% to 15% margin. Mm-hmm. Now, get 100 people together and get 85% of them to agree on anything. It's really hard to do. Amendment 7 in Missouri that passed on the simple ballot language appeared to change state law to prevent a convicted felon, a former state legislator who was convicted of a felony, from receiving a state pension. Well, that sounds like a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
But when you read the whole amendment and get to the backside of the amendment language, it actually changed the way state legislators and judges are paid, or whether how pay increases are approved.
Mm-hmm.
There's a citizens commission that's appointed by the legislature, the governor, and the Supreme Court in Missouri. And they meet every 2 years to make recommendations on pay levels for state legislators and judges.
Mm-hmm.
State judges in Missouri have been getting irritated because the legislature here has rejected the recommendations by the citizens commission for the last 6 years. So the judges haven't gotten a raise in 6 years. And they're getting mad about it. But the legislators are like, hey, we don't deserve a pay increase when the rest of the state is having a tough time economically. The state budget isn't balanced. We're in the deficit. We shouldn't increase salaries. The judges tacked this change onto Amendment 7 that it will now require a two-thirds no vote in both houses of the legislature. If either one of the houses does not reject the recommendation by two-thirds, the pay increase automatically goes into effect.
That's backwards.
That is totally backwards. And I just can't believe, I was one of the 15% that voted against it. I think you were too.
I voted against it.
But 85% of our fellow citizens in Missouri voted for it because of the way it was, because of the way it appeared on the ballot.
Well, I have this general belief. Don't put it in the Constitution. There are very few things that belong in a state constitution.
Right. It should be a document that
And we've got one of the longest constitutions already. We don't need to be adding more.
Because it was amended in like the mid-1940s, and this is one of the changes, that it can be passed, that it can be amended by a simple majority of the voters in the state of Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Missouri is sort of a microcosm of the country. I looked at a map after the election, and CNN did one of those county-by-county breakdowns with the map shaded red and blue by county based on how the vote turned out. And just like the famous map of the 2000 presidential election showed the areas of blue along the coasts and then a few little pockets in the middle of the country, you know, Chicago, Minneapolis, St. Paul, that went for Al Gore, St. Louis, Kansas City. Missouri's the same way. You've got these pockets of blue around Missouri and Kansas City, and then here in Columbia, which is a heavily Democratic county. And then the rest of the state is red.
So Columbia would be Chicago.
Sort
of. St. Louis would be the East Coast.
Right.
And Kansas City would be the West Coast.
Sort of. Yeah, it's a microcosm. And the result of the Claire McCaskill-Jim Talent Senate race in Missouri was reflective of that. McCaskill carried the metropolitan areas and Columbia, and she was defeated in the rural counties. Mm-hmm. But the difference, the margin for Talent in the rural counties was not as great as the margin for McCaskill in the urban areas. So that's why she won.
Let me tell you why, just in case you're wondering, why Columbia, the town where we now live, is so liberal mm-hmm. compared to the rest of Missouri. Well, many college towns tend to be more liberal.
Sure.
And this is one of the most collegiate towns in the country.
Right. In addition to the University of Missouri, Columbia, which is the main campus for the University of Missouri system, we also have Stevens College, which is a very artsy college. It's theater, very renowned. It's one of the top two schools in the country for theater, in fact. Then we also have Columbia College, which has extension campuses around the country, but is growing and becoming very well known in liberal arts.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got three excellent schools here.
William Woods?
And William Woods University, which is also here. So we've got four colleges based
in. Seems like there's another one. Seems like altogether there are like six of them. But
well, there's Lincoln University that's down in Jefferson City, which is the next county south of here. That's Cole County. But
it's an amazing
Columbia.
Town. And frankly, it's a great town. So a lot of people who do go to school here, they will remain here.
And a lot of people come to Columbia to retire. One of the state representatives that represents the Columbia area, a Republican, incidentally, who managed to hang onto his seat despite the fact that two out of three voters here voted for Claire McCaskill, is a Chicago native who moved down here and decided to retire here. In fact, the Progressive Party candidate for Congress.
So the two of you are going to get together and have Ditka parties?
Yeah. And he got his degree at Bradley in Peoria, where I worked for quite a while. So we were able to reminisce about the old days in Peoria. Although he was there, you know, about the time I was being born. So, but anyway, it was an interesting result. And I believe that, and this is one of the things I think that the exit polls nationally revealed, which I think is being misinterpreted by some in the Democratic Party. They believe they've got a mandate now to go after the administration, which I don't think is going to happen, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But the exit polls, according to the political science professors that I've interviewed and talked to, it was not so much a mandate on Iraq. It was a reaction to the scandals in the Republican Party. So in other words, Jack Abramoff and Mark Foley had more of an impact on this election than the way the war is going in Iraq.
I think that could be true. It's
now the cumulative effect may be the answer. But according to the exit polls, people who said that they voted for Democratic candidates did so more because they were more likely to mention the scandals.
Well, let me just bring up one thing about that. There was a story out recently regarding the science of exit polling, and it depends on who's being asked and who's asking.
True.
If the person asking is young and hip, and the person being asked is, say, a man being asked by a woman, he's going to try to be more intelligent and lean toward the left.
Okay.
If you're being asked by an older person, you might lean toward the right in your answer. In other words, people answering exit poll questions aren't necessarily telling you what they really think.
They're telling you what they think
the
questioner wants to hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's very true. So it remains to be seen what impact this will have. Now, regarding the mandate the Democrats have to go after George Bush and the administration, Nancy Pelosi said flat out that impeachment is off the table.
She said that before the election.
Right. Despite the fact that John Conyers, who's now in charge of the committee that would bring charges of impeachment, drop a bill of impeachment, said that he was going to do it. Pelosi, who is presumably the next Speaker of the House, says it's off the table, not going to happen. But whether Conyers will go along with that or not remains to be seen. Henry Waxman, who will assume the chairmanship of the Government Reform Committee, the committee which launched investigation after investigation of Dan Burton's committee that launched all the investigations of the Clinton administration, may feel compelled to return the favor now that the Democrats can go after the Bush administration. We shall see. Personally, and this is something that I told some friends by email earlier today, I think it was in the cards that the Democrats were going to win a long time ago. I mean, a month ago, Reuters reported that the big investment bankers, Goldman Sachs, Bear Stearns, Merrill Lynch, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Morgan Stanley, for the first time since the Republicans took the Congress in 1994, this was the first election cycle in which those investment bankers were donating more to Democratic candidates than to Republican candidates.
Well, it's time for things to swing left.
Right.
We've talked about that for a while. The whole purpose is to get everybody in the middle.
Right. But the fact then is that these money guys were backing Democratic candidates this time, and they weren't backing them to the exclusion of Republicans. These guys play both sides of the
game. Oh, of course they do. Of course they do.
Which indicates that they have their own agenda, which isn't going to change depending on the ruling, you know, the party in control of Congress. They want the same agenda followed, and that's why they're supporting the candidates they think most likely to carry out their plan.
If you are herding a bunch of cattle to an end destination, there are times you have to herd the cattle to the left and times you have to herd them to the right.
Right. And so my feeling is, and this is just a gut feeling, that these big money guys don't want to upset the apple cart. They backed the Democrats because they saw the winds of change, you know, sensed the winds of change. But they don't want the winds of change to be a hurricane that blows everything over and really turns it. Okay, fine, Democrats are in power now, but let's not get too crazy with this investigation stuff. We don't want to make it bad for, you know, we don't want to create an atmosphere that's bad for business.
Well, speaking of business and banking, on Friday, there was a huge meeting of bankers, and China came out and said, by the way, we're going to start diversifying our holdings. They hold trillions of dollars in foreign currency. And they say they want to invest more in the euro. Well, the immediate reaction on Friday was, oh my gosh, they're going to start dumping dollars. And the Chinese says, no, no. Oh, we'd never, no, we're not going to do that. Well, I personally think that they plan on dumping dollars because that the euro is frankly, the denomination of the future. However, if they had said, yes, you're right, we're about to dump dollars, their price for those dollars would have tanked.
Exactly.
So they want to keep that artificially high until they get rid of all the dollars they want to get rid of, and then it will tank. So the interesting thing I find about that is they waited until after the election to do that.
Yeah. Again, they don't want to, you know, disrupt anything too much. And you're right. They want to, you know, do their business in secret, take their public pronouncements with a grain of salt if they're dumping dollars, which is likely because they hold an awful lot of them.
They are not dumping gold.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Right.
And, Derek and I, we have feelings on gold, and we won't go into that. But speaking along that same line, there's a big meeting on Monday. You were telling me about that just a little while ago.
Yeah, the commission that George Bush has put together on Iraq, the Baker-Hamilton Commission, which is...
the Baker Study Group.
The Baker Study Group. James Baker, former Secretary of State, been described as the consigliere of the Bush family, and ex-Congressman Lee Hamilton, who represented your district in Southern Indiana.
He's got a snappy haircut.
Yeah.
He's got a buzz just like I do.
They're going to present their recommendations on Iraq to President Bush. This will take place tomorrow, the 13th. 13.
Yeah.
And present at this audience in the Oval Office will be, I mean, they're basically this getting
audience.
Everybody
I love
together.
That we put that, like they're all kissing his ring.
Yeah, exactly. Godfather. The will include Vice President Cheney, National Security Advisor Hadley, Secretary of State Rice, DNI Negroponte, CIA Director General Michael Hayden, the U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad, very interesting, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Peter Pace, as well as the incoming Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates. They will all be there to hear this the recommendation of this bipartisan committee. Now, anytime there's a bipartisan committee that reaches an agreement on something in the U.S., you can bet the fix is in. The 9/11 Commission was a bipartisan commission. So,
do you suppose that they had this all planned out and they knew exactly what their decision was before the election?
I think that's exactly right.
I think so too.
Yeah, they are basically presenting a plan for the U.S. to withdraw from Iraq. and to make it appear that we're doing so in such a way as to save face.
Mm-hmm. And the key word there is appear.
Yeah.
We are not going to withdraw from Iraq, no matter what this government says. I just honestly don't think we will.
No, I think what may happen is that we will withdraw to these enclaves, these super bases.
Yes.
And we will withdraw from the urban areas. Now,
and we will formally, I'm using quotey marks, formally hand over control to Iraq. But we will be in our little enclaves.
And on call for any emergencies that might erupt. These enclaves will are essentially self-supporting, well, self-supporting insofar as they can take supplies by air and not have to truck them in through some of those really dangerous areas controlled by insurgents.
And nice staging grounds for the war to come.
Nice staging grounds for the war to come. That is correct. So there's a shift in the wind, though, and Debkafile is reporting that this shift is going to, one way or another, leave Israel somewhat out in the cold. This may have something to do with a news report that came out this past week that the U.S. has basically made the first payment to the government of Lebanon toward the ultimate goal of equipping and training the army in Lebanon. On Thursday, the U.S. gave Lebanon $10.5 million to train and equip soldiers. Overall, we are committed to $40 million of money and equipment.
I have a puzzled look on my face, don't I?
You do.
Why are we giving money to the Lebanese soldiers when most of them are sympathetic to Hamas?
If not members of, Hezbollah.
Hezbollah, sorry.
Or Amal. Either way, both of them are...
In fact, the government is starting to crack up over there.
Yes, it is. And of course, the claim will be made that it's better for Israel if we can stabilize the situation in Lebanon. What's really happening behind the scenes, I think, and there are other researchers who have done more work on this than I do, so I'm summarizing, and if take that for what it's worth, it's being filtered through me, that Lebanon is sort of the scene of a proxy war taking place, not just between the U.S. and Israel on one side and Iran on the other, but between Saudi Arabia on one side and Iran on the other. Mm-hmm. The Saudis have been longtime supporters of the business interests in Lebanon that made a lot of money there through real estate and development and other dealings. But and that was the group that was represented by the former prime minister who was killed, assassinated, mm-hmm. Hariri. And the Lebanese, of course, the Iranians, of course, are exercising their influence through Hezbollah and the other groups that are fighting inside Lebanon. So the Saudis don't like the idea of a sort of a Shiite crescent stretching from Lebanon through Iraq and over into Iran. Mm-hmm. Countering their influence in the Middle East. And so that is just one more dynamic here that again, Americans don't understand very well. Sadly, the people who are in charge of security in the United States, people in the intelligence community can't even tell the difference between Shiite and Sunni. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I think the key point here is, though, why are we going to give $40 million to the military in Lebanon when more than a quarter of the seats in the Lebanese parliament are held by members of Hezbollah? Mm-hmm. And many of the soldiers in the Lebanese army are either sympathetic to or
members of
Hezbollah. It doesn't make any sense. But that is why Ehud Olmert, Prime Minister of Israel, who is visiting Washington, D.C. tomorrow, November 13th, mm-hmm. is going to be one of the first to hear the new policy on Iran and Lebanon and Israel, the whole Middle Eastern situation, after the Baker-Hamilton group presents its findings.
And I think not coincidentally, the next major world leader to hear it will be Vladimir Putin.
Right. So Olmert will talk with the president, although the way Debkafile puts it, Olmert will be basically told to listen. Mm-hmm. He's not going to get any input here. And then on Wednesday of this week, the 15th, President Bush is going to stop to refuel Air Force One in Moscow on his way to the APEC meeting, the Asia-Pacific Economic Conference in Hanoi. Interesting that it's being held in Hanoi. Did we win that war? And he's going to be talking with Vladimir Putin on sort of an unscheduled meeting with President Putin. Normally, this stopover would have just been for refueling, and the president of Russia would not have been, you know, expected to go to the airport to visit the president. But in this case, because it's just a stopover and because of the urgency of the message, mm-hmm. Apparently the president feels it's compelling enough that he needs to try to swing President Putin over to the to supporting this new plan.
Now, let's not forget that we have a lot of resources over in that area right now. It's not just the men and women on the ground in Iraq, mm-hmm. but it's also the ships, the Navy, that a lot of our Navy is over in that area right now, in the Red right. Sea and in the Persian Gulf and in close to Japan.
And of course, we've got a lot of bases in some of the other stands, like Kazakhstan and mm-hmm. Turkmenistan, that are also poised and could be used in a strike against Iran.
The fact is that if something happened today, mm-hmm. we are in place.
Right.
And Iran knows it. In fact, there's a story at Watcher Magazine right now because Iran has been touting on Iranian television their new spy drone capability, mm-hmm. and they say that they took this footage of a U.S. ship, and they didn't identify which one it was that is in the Persian Gulf right now. And
it was an aircraft carrier.
Exactly. It looks like either the Kitty Hawk or the Enterprise.
Yeah, and if it's the Kitty Hawk, that would be a shock because the Kitty Hawk's supposed to be near Japan right now. Mm-hmm. The Enterprise is in the Middle East. It could be the Eisenhower is the other aircraft carrier we've got there.
I think the Eisenhower is actually in the Red Sea.
Right.
It was originally supposed to go to the Persian Gulf, but word is it's in the Red Sea. Now, I don't know. It could have moved by now.
And there's no way to know that whether the picture that was released by the Iranians is actually...
Is it even true.
Right,
exactly.
That it is what they say
it
is.
They could have gotten that off the internet.
Interestingly...
And, made it look really fuzzy. I can do that in Photoshop.
Sure. Interestingly, the Iranians just completed their Great Prophet War Games, mm-hmm. which included firing more missiles as part of a war game ever by any military in history.
And now they're saying, we have proven to the world that we are the strongest and the mightiest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. While that's happening, the deputy defense minister in Israel said that, because they anticipated what President Bush is going to tell Prime Minister Olmert tomorrow, mm-hmm. that Israel may have to go it alone and take out Iran's nuclear facility.
Well, I have to say this. I seriously doubt that what Olmert is going to hear officially will be the very first time he ever hears it. I suspect that he has been told already mm-hmm. what is going to be discussed tomorrow. You don't, in public, tell somebody, oh, and by the way, here's our plan. Mm-hmm. Now, he's been told through back channels, I'm sure.
Probably so. And while all this is going on, Iranian forces have been reported gathering on the border of southern Kurdistan, which is northeastern Iraq. We'd reported before that Turks and Iranians were making incursions into Kurdish territory in Iraq. So that's just one more thing to add to the mix.
I just wanted to bring up something that just came out in the news that is not new, but I'm wondering why it came out now. And that's this former government employee who is now saying that the whole Lockerbie trial was fixed.
That's a good point. I'm glad you went there because we do
and
need
I
to get into that.
I went there because I was thinking of the whole Syria thing mm-hmm. and our discussions with, who was the gentleman that we talked to? Who's
Jay
in the house.
Fields.
Yeah, Jay Fields. Thank you
right.
very much.
Yeah, this was an interesting, and you'll find this article at Watcher Magazine, of course. We'll put this all in the show notes at PIDradio.com so you can look up these articles and know that we're just not making stuff up on the
Although
off the cuff.
I often do make things up.
But
I'm making this up right now.
We'll identify
no,
it.
No, I don't. We do try. We try very, very hard to give you the information. You know, the direct information. So, yeah, we're interpreting it. We're saying this is what we're getting out of this.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to go to it. And you may not agree with us. And you won't be the first.
Yeah.
Nor will you be the last.
But it is interesting that a former counsel to the U.S. Counterterrorism Bureau, a guy named Michael Scharf, has come out and said that the case prosecuted against the Libyans who took the fall for the Pan Am bombing, that the case was so full of holes it was like Swiss cheese and that it should never have gone to trial. Now, the reason we mentioned Jay Fields and Susan Lindauer, you may remember we've spoken a number of times about Susan Lindauer, who was the second cousin of Andy Card, former chief of staff to President Bush, who was held without being charged, essentially. She was declared incompetent to stand trial. She was charged with... originally, it was implied that she was charged with helping Iraq spy on the U.S., but eventually the charges were kind of modified so that she was charged with being an unregistered agent of a foreign power.
Exactly. Which is okay as long as you register as a spy.
Exactly. And that's kind of silly because she made no secret of her affiliation with the government of Iraq and her intent to try to persuade the government, the administration, not to go to war with Iraq prior to 2003. She wrote letters to not just Andy Card, but also to Vice President Cheney and Colin Powell and so forth.
But her story has, you know, there are a lot of dimensions to her story.
Yes.
One of them has to do with the drug trade that was going through Syria. In fact, Syriana.
Mm-hmm.
Is a really interesting movie we've mentioned before that sort of touches on the drug trade and how that back channeled into, it doesn't really go to it in the movie, but you can kind of use it as background information when you look at the Lindauer information, get an idea of what she was talking about.
Right. She gave a deposition for, it's a Middle Eastern research institute, which was formerly headed by Daniel Pipes. Daniel Pipes writes extensively about Islamic terror and is a very outspoken critic of radical Islam, to the point where he is often criticized by others for being a little too strenuous in his he's basically aligned with identified as a neocon.
Right.
But in 1998, Susan Lindauer gave a deposition to this group, which quoted a gentleman that she'd met who claimed to have been a CIA asset working in Syria, who told her that the guys responsible for bombing the Pan Am flight were Syrian intelligence who were running the drug trade with the help of elements of U.S. intelligence, the CIA. The purpose of the bombing on that particular flight was to take out a couple of DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, agents who had discovered the links to U.S. intelligence and were coming back home with evidence from their office in Cyprus. Mm-hmm. They were on the flight coming out of Frankfurt, Germany, that was used to courier the heroin coming from Lebanon's Bekaa Valley through Damascus and out.
The whole story about it being a boombox was fabricated.
It was in one of the packages that was being regularly shipped through Germany on this flight, this Pan Am flight. And German intelligence had been instructed by the CIA to let these through without inspecting them. And so that's how the Syrians smuggled the bomb through onto the Pan Am flight.
Yeah, you know, a red flag for me, a couple of them. Anytime a plane suddenly goes down, one of the first things I do is try to find out who was on that plane.
Mm-hmm.
But second of all is anytime when you have an explosion that takes, you know, litters an area with tiny, tiny, tiny pieces. And someone comes up in a short time and says, oh, look, I found a serial number off of, this is clearly off of the bomb.
Right, yeah.
Or the car that was used to be the bomb, in the case of the World Trade Center bombing back in 92.
About 92. We just happened to have found the guy's ID card unscathed after it fell 10,000 feet.
Yeah, anytime you hear stuff like that, really, that's got to be a red flag.
Well, the Scots who prosecuted the case have reviewed the Lockerbie investigation, and it's supposed to report in the next few months as to whether it believes there was a miscarriage of justice in prosecuting that case. Susan Lindauer. It was our suspicion, and I think there are others who feel the same, that it was not just her opposition to the war in Iraq that resulted in her being arrested and then locked up and told, unless you let us medicate you with this narcotic, you will be declared incompetent to stand trial, and we're going to hold you against your will until you agree to be drugged. I mean, that sounds like something out of 1984.
It really does.
But there are others who believe the same. We've mentioned before a book called The Last Circle mm-hmm. by Carol Marshall uh-huh. or Sherry Seymour.
She uses a pen name.
There's also another book out there called, of course, the name is going to escape me now, but it's written by Lester Coleman. The Trail of the Octopus is the name of the book.
Oh, yes, yes.
Lester Coleman was a CIA officer who apparently was aware of this drug trade running through Syria. And I've not read the book yet, just read some excerpts in the introduction, and it appears to go down the same trail and detail how the Libyans were a politically convenient fall country. Gaddafi was a convenient fall guy mm-hmm. because nobody wanted to point the finger at the Syrians, and especially the connection to American intelligence was not to be revealed. Mm-hmm. And so because Libya was very unpopular, they were a convenient target for this investigation. And it makes one wonder if the fact that Libya is now off of our list of, it's now officially off the Axis of Evil list.
It is.
Because we got Gaddafi to cooperate. Look, mm-hmm. take the blame for this and then we'll declare everything's cool. And you'll be, we can start trading with you again, help develop your oil fields. I suspect that something like that has happened. That's one of the interesting things going on out there right now is this forthcoming report from the Scottish Criminal Cases Review Commission on Lockerbie. But again, the Susan Lindauer case is an interesting side note. And again, we're thankful that she's at least back out and back home again.
There are lots of things going on. Another area that we keep taking a look at and is just completely not reported in the mainstream media, and that is that the North Ossetia region of Georgia that's involved in sort of a turf war.
Well, South Ossetia is the region that's declared its independence. North Ossetia is, sort of semi-autonomous.
That's right.
South Ossetians don't want to be, even they're closer to Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia. They want to be independent and separate, and they're kind of hoping for Russian help.
That's true.
So
what I find really interesting is that South Ossetia and North Ossetia have different, if I understood it right, have different roots. North Ossetia goes back to Iran. South Ossetia, if I remember correctly, goes more back to the Turks.
Yeah, and there's been a number of ethnic influences in that area. But
these lines go, these turf wars go back so far in the past. Thousands of years.
Yeah, Americans in general have a very short...
Because we've only been over here, a little over two centuries.
I mean, we look at old houses. For us, an old house is something that was built,
50 years ago.
50 years ago. pre-World War II is old.
Yeah.
We were doing some research today on Ossetia and discovered that a people group called the Alans, well, I always thought were Germans. I think because they had mm-hmm. they'd thrown in their lot during the latter stages of the Roman Empire with the, mm-hmm. the Vandals. And, sacked North Africa. They were part of the group that was rampaging across North Africa when Augustine was alive. And, it was that kind of prompted.
That probably wasn't Woody Allen then.
No.
Probably wasn't one of those.
No.
Alan. It's the name. It's, there are other ways to put it. But essentially, the word etymologically goes back to.
To Aryan, which we talked about a little bit last week. Aryan. Is a people group that stems from the region now occupied by Iran mostly. Persia changed its name officially to Iran in 1935. The Shah changed it to show unity with the National Socialist Party in Germany because mm-hmm. Iran in Farsi means land of the Aryans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wah, duh. And that's why last week we posted that picture of Hezbollah and their salute, mm-hmm. which, again, explains it all. There is no corresponding gesture in Arabic culture or the Islamic faith. When you do that straight arm salute, it means one thing and one thing only, Sieg Heil.
It does. And sadly, if you're not aware of this, the pledge to the flag
in the United States,
mm-hmm. used that same salute up until 1943 or something like that, in the late 19th century.
Right, right. Going back to the late 1800s, mm-hmm. it wasn't until World War II when it became so popular in Germany. Now, there's a lot of evidence out there, and we won't just touch on it. We'll just mention it, won't even go there, that The rise of the Reich in the 20s and 30s was accomplished with the help of American bankers and industrialists. Mm-hmm. There's no question. In fact, it can be argued that the big crash in 29 was because investment capital in the U.S. had been funneled into Germany. The surprise to us was when we started researching what was going on in Ossetia and discovering that it was originally, or not originally, but it was eventually settled by the Allens, who had been pushed out of their territory by the by the Huns in the 3rd and 4th centuries. Mm-hmm. They'd split into several groups. Some of them went west and lined up with some of the German tribes, but they are recorded going as far back as the 1st century BC by Greek historians as being a race of people who were primarily tall, blonde, and blue-eyed.
Yes.
Doesn't sound like many Iranians you know today.
No, it doesn't, but apparently even today in Iran, it's not unusual to have a reddish hues in your hair, and there are some blue-eyed Iranian, you know, Persian people.
And I think many Americans still have the misconception. I did up until the time I was into college and went to school with a young man from Iran that Iranians are Arabs. And they are very clear on that point. Yeah. No, we are not Arabs. We are Persian. Mm-hmm. But more than that, they are Aryan. Mm-hmm. And you look at Hezbollah and the way they salute. And then you look at other groups and the way they salute. Fatah, Hamas, and the fact that they come from the Muslim Brotherhood, which was founded back in the 20s, mm-hmm. with and then protected after World War II by the intelligence agencies, MI6 and the CIA, and became Al-Qaeda. We're dealing with the same, and the reason we're talking about this is relates to the spiritual war that we talk about.
Go back to the Table of Nations.
And go back to the Table of Nations, right. There is some sort of a spirit that's pushing this whole Aryan race concept, which manifested itself not just in the Nazi Germany of World War II, because the Nazis didn't suddenly go away and disappear after World War II. It also manifested itself in the fighting that was taking place in the Middle East during World War II, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and the help of the Iranians, the Persians in that area at that time. Has manifested itself now in Al-Qaeda and the other radical Islamic groups that that devolved from the Muslim Brotherhood, mm-hmm. which is gaining power in Egypt. Over a quarter of the parliamentary seats in Egypt are now held by the Muslim
27%.
Brotherhood. 27%. We see this taking place in the Middle East, and then we take a look at what's happening in Germany. The neo-Nazis are set to hold a conference in Berlin.
They're holding it
this weekend, in fact. Began yesterday, Saturday. And it is a whole belief system that ties together this pure racial bloodline theory that goes all the way back to this race of people who came from Atlantis. Mm-hmm. And you've done more research on this than I, but my take on this is that this is the same sort of royal dragon court sort of thing that draws its mm-hmm. lines all the way back to the Nephilim, to those who came down from heavens. And
very much so. You know, you and I have talked before about how Jesus Christ came from a pure genealogical line because Noah was perfect in his generations.
Mm-hmm.
That was the reason for the flood, because of the polluted DNA. It was the sin that was going on, but primarily that sin was lying with angels,
mm-hmm.
polluting the DNA, because God had promised a redeemer. Well, that same sort of stuff is going on today. We see this infighting between the angels there. I would make the argument that same human angelic mingling is taking place today.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing it as, well, frankly, fights that don't make sense if you don't go back to that, if you don't pay attention to what is in Scripture.
Right. It really helps to illuminate things. And I can't say that I've got the pieces formed together in my mind.
Oh,
and
neither
so
do I.
We certainly encourage your participation in the forum at peeringintodarkness.com/forum to help, you know, hash out these ideas. In addition to the neo-Nazis who are rising again in Germany politically, we see the rise of this same spirit, which was the Muslim Brotherhood. In the Balkans, we saw this with SS divisions, mm-hmm. Waffen-SS divisions that mm-hmm. were active during World War II and then reactivated during the 90s, during the conflicts there.
Exactly. And my brain just kind of connected. I started something a second ago, didn't finish it, and I apologize for that. I brought up Jesus Christ because the Aryan nations and the Dragon Court do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Their bloodline is extremely important to them, but
yes.
for a different reason, because theirs goes back to Angelic
beings, right. And they're quite proud of this fact.
When the royal blood of Europe is really believed to go back to the gods.
And the gods, you want to call them the Anunnaki or whatever. But Enki, again, is shows up in the genealogy charts that I've seen of the Royal Dragon Court. Mm-hmm. And I think Peter Goodgame makes a convincing case that Enki, the ancient Sumerian god, is to be equated with Lucifer or Satan or however you want to name him. But the neo-Nazis, and this was a very interesting point, and it relates to something that Tom Horn and David W. Lowe, I've got to give David Lowe credit for finding this. Sharon posted a picture of one of the attendees of the far-right German National Democratic Party at their convention this weekend wearing a T-shirt that translated from the German basically says,
"He who sows the wind will reap the whirlwind."
Right. Which was the speech that which was included in the inauguration speech, or inaugural speech of George W. Bush.
It was included in George W. Bush, and Ahmadinejad said it as well.
Thank you. And that's
really
where we're tying together. Yes.
Is that both men go back to Aryanism.
Yes.
Because the Caucasian race comes from Iran.
Right. The Caucasus Mountains. Look at a map. The Caucasus Mountains is basically where Georgia and Ossetia are today. That's where that tribe, the Alans, settled. Those of us who are of fair skin are referred to as Caucasian. And this relates to the whole bloodline, the Aryan bloodline thing. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, the nation of Iran changed its name to Iran to call itself Land of the Aryans. Mm-hmm. They did it in 1935 when Hitler was reaching the peak of his power. Coincidence? No.
No, not at all.
Hitler was helped to rise to power through the financial work done by men like Prescott Bush, mm-hmm. George W.'s grandfather. And this phrase, this reaping the whirlwind, continues to pop up in various places. And again, we don't think it's a coincidence.
No,
we think we're just catching a glimpse of something here, and we're talking about it to try to help flesh out our ideas.
And that's why we have decided together. What we do. Is crypto geopolitics.
Mm-hmm.
Geopolitical movements that are hidden.
Right. It's...
Or at least veiled.
It's almost like... and this is a left turn. You remember the television series Highlander?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Right.
Loved it.
And there was a group...
Hated that second movie.
Well, it was kind of silly.
Well, anyway, seriously.
But interestingly, there was a group of humans who kept watch on the immortals.
Called the Watchers.
The Watchers, right. And in a sense, I think that is what we and those of us who share this view, people like Tom Horn, mm-hmm. like Mike Heiser, Guy Malone, like many of the people that we talk with on a regular basis, mm-hmm. subscribers at the forum, see that that's what's going on here, that there are forces at work that are hidden from human eyes most of the time, nearly all the time. But and what we're trying to do is discern the shapes from the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult, but I think we've caught a glimpse of something here. And it's really interesting that there are guys who are secularists like Dave Emery, mm-hmm. who's really done an excellent job of tracking the influence of fascism and the Nazi philosophy through Hitler in the 30s and then how it was spread through the world like a virus after World War II. But he is a secularist. He does not believe in the spiritual or supernatural component
He's
involved there.
He's only got part of the puzzle.
He's got part
He's
of the puzzle.
He's got part of the pieces. You cannot reconcile politics or warfare without religion.
Right. So the next step is really interesting. What are we going to see? As we see the meeting tomorrow, Monday, with George W. Bush and James Baker Lee Hamilton, their commission, what are we going to do with Iraq? Well, we've got these super bases there. Are we going to withdraw from them? Probably not. Are we going to use them to attack Iran? I don't know. Isn't it interesting, though, that we've got these two world leaders who have both employed that same phrase that appears to stem from the same source, apparently at cross purposes with one another right now?
Mm-hmm.
George W. Bush and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Debgafile believes that the loser in this change that's about to take place. The losers, actually, are Israel and Jordan, both of which cast their lot with the United States. Are we abandoning them? There are those like John Loftus, who I would dearly love to get an interview with.
He's a busy guy.
He's a busy guy. He's about to start his own radio show, though, nationally syndicated on a network that is the successor to Air America. I'm very curious to hear that show, because he's a guy who has connected a lot of the dots between
he's
the CIA.
In the bowels of the CIA.
Right. John Loftus was a regular on the John Bachelor show, which was syndicated by ABC Radio, was just recently canceled. Loftus is a former prosecutor with the Justice Department, an attorney who has been into the, as you say, the bowels of the CIA. He described their archives as being like the room that you see at the end of the Indiana Jones movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Huge crates and crates and crates filled with God only knows what. But he said there were boxes and boxes and boxes of documentation in there showing the connections between the CIA and the Muslim Brotherhood and how we and MI6 protected the Muslim Brotherhood after World War II and the connections to the Nazis.
And he said no one was supposed to have seen those. They weren't supposed to be available until 2015.
Right. And those have all been shredded since then.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a fellow, the guy who wrote the book, Bob Baer, on which the movie Syriana is based,
mm-hmm.
said that he was shocked to find out that there was so little on the Muslim Brotherhood in the CIA archives. And Loftus called him and said, what are you talking about? There's tons of stuff there. And Baer said, it's not there now. So anyway, Loftus says that he believes that despite the outward appearances of the United States government, and I hope I'm understanding his position correctly. I don't want to speak for him. But he's written a book called The Secret War Against the Jews, which appears to lay out the case that within the U.S. government, despite appearances to the contrary, we are actually not aiding the Jews, that we are in fact working against the state of Israel, and that outward appearances to the contrary, what it boils down to is this: the Arabs have the oil, the Jews, Israel, got none.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it boils down to.
Mm-hmm.
There is no economic interest in serving or preserving the nation state of Israel. And then you add into the fact that the CIA and powerful industrialists within the United States mm-hmm. have for years been supporting and promoting the Muslim Brotherhood and its child groups such as Hamas and Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
And it begins to make a little more sense. So in spite of what we hear in the, you know, in public that we are overprotective of Israel, we're too protective of Israel, it may well be that there is a spirit that is working inside the United States government to accomplish exactly the opposite, which is the destruction of not just Israel, but the Jews. And again, Israel and the Jews are separate entities as far as we're concerned.
Well, that's the thing to remember, that ultimately the leaders of nations are being led by a spirit of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
It's either the Holy Spirit or another spirit.
Right.
It's either part of God's plan because it's part of God's kingdom, or it's part of God's plan, but it's against God's kingdom. Ultimately, all of it is under God's control.
Mm-hmm.
He allows these things to happen for his reasons, and I don't even claim to understand God's reasons for these things, and I'm glad he's the one controlling it and not me.
Yeah. So a lot to chew on from this week. We've got the historic connections there between the territory controlled by the ancient Aryan people and this group of this tribe that I mistakenly thought was German, the Alans.
And we didn't even get into the Gok tribe that I took a lot. We'll talk about them another time. I have to laugh. I have to laugh. This has nothing to do with the Alans directly, but before we came in here to talk, Derek had been sitting there and working on his computer, and I said, well, why don't we just go do the show? And he said, okay. And I was starting to organize my thoughts, and I said, stop it.
That's right.
He is, and I praise him for this, because he is getting away from that need to have everything lined up in front of him. He is so incredibly knowledgeable about many, many things.
Oh.
And I think that ultimately the best thing for Derek to do is just sit and talk.
Well, it's a lot easier to do when you're here to share ideas with and to bounce it, because we complement each other, I think, very well. And I think that would be just as much fun as I have doing the daily program at work. I would love it. It would be infinitely more fun if we were doing it together. Of course, they'd probably throw us out if we started talking like this.
We wouldn't even get through a whole broadcast.
That's right.
We'd be kicked out.
What are you talking about? We don't
People
even understand.
Would be so afraid. It would be like the War of the Worlds. No, they're joking. Oh, gosh. I want to apologize, by the way, to one of our listeners. And honestly, I can't recall who it is right offhand. And I want to thank you, first of all, for sending me the link to the Monsanto video that you can that was at YouTube. I did watch it. It was information that I had part of it, but I learned a great deal from the video. Thank you for sending it. We were going to talk about that tonight. We got long-winded about things taking place overseas, politics. Crypto politics. Yes, from the planet crypto politics. Anyway, we're going to talk about that another time. I want to continue to do some research because Monsanto is doing some very devious patenting of seeds and genetic alterations within the seeds in conjunction with their herbicides. And there are lots of farmers that are being prosecuted because of this, and it's really a very, very devious. I mean, it gets into many things. It's not just economics, but it also gets into what I am calling genomorphing, and that is the intentional use of external pressures such as chemical sprays and herbicides and viruses and things like that to intentionally change the human genome.
That is
transhuman world.
Yeah, that is something that we do need to talk about because that is
what my book's about.
A nasty, And by the way, if you're tracking along, what's your word count now for National Novel Writing Month?
It's getting close to 26,000.
Yeah, okay. I'm at about 7,500 right now, and
but consider you work all day long. I mean, I'm home all day. I'm so blessed to be in a position where my husband goes out there and he slays dragons all day, comes home with dragon meat, and we cook it up, and that's what we have.
Well,
that and fudge.
Yes, the fudge was that was excellent. She made some of her patented Kentucky fudge today, and I'm not going to need to eat for a day or two, I think.
And I just found out that we can freeze that, so because I make huge batches.
Yes.
So we're going to freeze some of it.
Need to mention a couple of interesting little changes in the way that you can listen to, or additions to the way that you can listen to PID Radio.
That's right.
First of all, want to mention that you can now, thanks to Daniel for pointing this out, thanks to Podlines, PODLINEZ, you can now listen to PID Radio over the phone anywhere in the world. Now, it is a long-distance call, and there's nothing we can do about that. But if you dial 1-510-510-495-6310, okay? It's a plus one if you're calling from outside the U.S., 510, the area code, 495-6310. You can listen to the most recent episode of PID Radio over the telephone.
That's right. And frankly, there are a lot of phone plans now that have free long distance. So if you've got a speaker phone and you're doing something else at the time, you don't want to have your computer tied up in it, you just want to dial in and use your speaker phone to listen, there you go.
And we've also been added to Global Public Radio, which is an online radio station, which has got a really interesting mix of programs, and I recommend it. In fact, Dave Emery's For the Record program is part of the lineup at Global Public Radio. You may remember last week we mentioned, and I linked to a number of For the Record programs. PID Radio, the new episodes will appear on Mondays on Global Public Radio. That's globalpublicradio.org. And he streams live. We'll be on at 1:30 in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, I should say, and then repeats a number of times during the day, 5 o'clock in the morning. This is Central Time. Yeah, UTC. Let me give you a UTC.
Minus 6?
Yeah, we're UTC minus 6, but if you're listening elsewhere in the world, UTC 0700, then again at 1100, again at 1500, and again at 1900 UTC on Mondays. Oh, it airs again at 2300 UTC. So the new episode, this will appear at globalpublicradio.org on Mondays. And again, a number of interesting programs there as well. Harry Shearer's Le Show. Harry Shearer, the guy that does the voice of Principal Skinner and Old Man Burns on The Simpsons, he's got a weekly program. Democracy Now, For the Record.
He's got all kinds of stuff. By the way, if you want us to, we're running out of time, so if you want to send us a note, send it to radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Join us at the forum. It's always there, but don't come to spam because we'll have to kick you out.
That's
don't
right.
Like those spammers.
That's right. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
News and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.